Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the premiere episode of Gillespie, a new show on From the Right Radio. I'm honored that you've allowed me to be a guest in your home and on your laptops, and look forward to the journey we'll be taking together. You won't always agree with me. Heck, you may not even always like me. But if you take this journey with me, I promise to open your mind to some new attitudes and ways of thinking, and hopefully share a little of who I am and the group with me in the process. I'm going to open this show with an observation about leadership. President Calvin Coolidge once said that we cannot do everything at once, but we can do something at once. And while I suppose there was a reason that he was known as Silent Cal, this time President Coolidge was making an important point. I was reminded of that quote when I heard about the recent comments Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels made in an excellent feature in the Weekly Standard a couple weeks ago. Essentially, Mitch said something along the lines of, "We'll worry about the country's fiscal problems before anything else, and the social conservatives will have to agree to disagree." He wasn't necessarily just targeting fiscal conservatives, but he was or social conservatives, but he was targeting social people who take any social issue stance. But anyway, in other words, he was saying, "I see the problem, I plan on fixing the problem, and I'm not going to get distracted by issues I see as secondary." As you might expect, a chorus of voices from many prominent social conservatives have expressed their frustration, namely Mike Huckabee, at seeing their most important issues being dismissed as secondary. Former Congressman J.C. Watt said, "This is like saying, let's ignore killing babies and ignore how we define marriage until we resolve the economy." But not so fast, Congressman. After the furor died down a bit, Governor Daniels, who is actually a committed pro-lifer himself, has made the abortion issue into a fiscal issue in only a way that the nation's most successful governor could. As I mentioned on a recent post over at joshgillespie.net, Governor Daniels has since announced that he would reinstate the infamous Mexico City policy, the executive order first instituted by President Reagan that bans the federal funding of abortions in foreign countries. As a way of making both sides happy, he cleverly made it both a fiscal and social issue by pointing out that the funds that are sent overseas are not only helping to kill unborn children, they're adding to our deficit as well. While some may scoff at the mere $1 billion spent over an eight-year period represents a drop of water in the Pacific Ocean that is our federal deficit, Governor Daniels has learned from experience that the only way to attack a budget crisis is line by line, with presumed small items that eventually add up to major dollars saved. Governor Daniels clearly has core beliefs. They didn't call him Mitch the Knife during his term as OMB director by accident. But beyond that, Daniels recognizes the current fiscal mess we're on, understands the solutions based on his own experience with a track record to back him up, and is willing to alienate a key component of the base he'll need in 2 years if his much-rumored presidential run does materialize. Governor Mitch Daniels is the kind of leader who sees things three steps ahead of everyone else. In this instance, not only has he demonstrated clear leadership with his deep focus on the key fiscal issues we face, he sees ways to involve the concerns of social conservatives and to get them to buy into his program as well. That's leadership, and that's what we've come to expect from Governor Mitch Daniels. But more of that commentary and analysis can be found over at my site, joshgillespie.net. But this show is Gillespie, and I got three other people here with me. I got Christy Kelly, who is a featured blogger at HoosierAccess.com and can be found at ChristyKelly.com. I got Mark Warner, and I got my man over on the machines, Mike Jazerski. This is my team. This makes up Gillespie. This is my crew. Guys, you're Hoosiers with me. What's your take on the governor's truce?
Well, I think I really like the Mexico City slant and how we can take that as a fiscal, as a social problem, but clearly us funding abortions overseas is a the huge, massive social problem, fiscal, social. And as, I think it would be good to deal with funding them here in our own country.
Yep, Planned Parenthood does get millions of dollars, and other services that provide abortions get millions of dollars in federal tax subsidies. Those are our tax dollars that are continuing to fund abortive services. And people have said to me, Josh, you're diminishing the abortion issue by putting a price tag on life. I said, if you're going to be able to convince fiscal conservatives who may be pro-life, who may be pro-choice, but they're looking at our current economic situation and being like, this kind of sucks, that abortion is a fiscal issue. Yeah, you're putting a dollar amount on it, but mm-hmm. The thing is, that's money, those are our tax dollars. You know, it's kind of the way I've described, I tell people that the way you're going to get me to become a green person is not by telling me how I'm going to save the environment. It's you're going to tell me how much green I'm saving in my wallet.
Exactly.
Exactly.
That is how you convince me.
The only reason I would ever be interested in a hybrid is, okay, am I going to save, how much is this going to really save me in the long run on gas?
Yeah. I think what people want to see is, you know, I think Americans, conservatives, liberals, whatever, if they want to see savings from their government, some people may be willing to see immediate savings, you know, may be willing to wait a couple years to see the savings, such with a hybrid car. More people want to see immediate savings. And I think that what we see by cutting federal funds going to services that provide abortions and reinstating the Mexico City policy, we're seeing immediate savings. Now, yeah, like I said, $1 billion here, $1 billion there is like a drop of water in the Pacific Ocean that is our national debt. When we're passing bills that are in the trillions and trillions of dollars, $1 billion may not seem like much. But frankly, we need to be attacking the budget with this kind of precision that we're looking at things that cost us $1 billion that we don't need to be spending $1 billion on, and we need to be looking at things that may cost us more and say, that where do we need to cut? We need to look at everything. Mm-hmm. And we had the opportunity, at least I had the opportunity a couple weeks ago, to sit down with Dan Coats, who is running for Senate here in Indiana. He is running against Brad Ellsworth. And when he was a senator in the 90s, he introduced the line item veto. It passed Congress, and Bill Clinton, I believe, was able to use it once before the Supreme Court struck it down as unconstitutional. But, you know, he's willing to go back into that, look at the reintroducing the line item veto, trying to figure out where it was unconstitutional, and being able to give the president the option of being able to say, we don't need to be spending money on this, we don't need to be spending money on this. And frankly, if we can attack those things in Congress, more is the better. But I think we need to give the president that kind of power.
Well, I think that's a great idea. But do you really see Barack Obama ever using a line item veto?
Well, maybe not to a conservative favor. That's true. He may not.
No.
But
he's like, he needs to spend more and more and more and more.
Well, if you spend less when it comes to things that matter to us.
Like maybe things that would strengthen the country?
Exactly.
Absolutely.
That don't benefit, but if it strengthens the country but doesn't strengthen the labor unions or the mob, which are one and the same, then
That's the Chicago way, right?
That's the Chicago way.
Well, I think that whoever is our candidate in 2012, whether it's Mitch Daniels, who continues to say that his eye is on Indiana. In fact, here in Indiana, we had our state convention just last weekend, and he reiterated that his eye is on Indiana.
But why did they go through all the expense of that nice video with him on the motorcycle and all that?
It was a nice video, and frankly, that video, I believe, was, if you ask me, it looked like it was used in 2008, not in 2012 or 2010, because it seemed to be talking more about a re-election.
But it didn't mention – it really didn't look like anything seen in – like it was more or less a continuation of that.
I can see your point. For those who haven't seen it, check it out. You can see it on HoosierAccess.com. And it's what you would expect from Mitch. Harley Davidson riding, governor – leading up to talk about how he's improved Indiana's economy, bringing our economy from a debt to a surplus.
No thanks to the Evan Bay, O'Bannon, and Kernan administrations.
Yes,
although in Kernan's defense, he only had 1 year to screw it all up.
Well, it didn't take him long, did it?
No.
So we on this upcoming show, we're going to actually be – our guests are going to be State Representative Dave Frizzell. Don't think that we're going to be focusing on Indiana only here. We're going to be focusing on national issues as well. We're actually going to be bringing in candidate Jackie Walorski, who is running in the 2nd Congressional District. You may have heard her on Jenny Erickson's show last week. She is also a state rep currently here in Indiana, but – Representative Frizzell and Representative Walorski have been working towards bringing cuts in Indiana in our budgets to bring us from a down fiscal environment to a surplus. You know, we're no longer in the red.
Speaking of Jackie Walorski, you know, she represents northern Indiana, which includes South Bend and Elkhart. No place in the United States has been affected by this recession than Elkhart, Indiana.
And I believe they have 17% unemployment up in Elkhart. And this,
well,
this
I've seen numbers anywhere from 20 to 25. So.
No, it's gone up since then.
Well, no. This was at its worst.
No. Well, the fact of the matter is we're going to be talking to these guys. We're going to be talking to them about how they were fiscal conservatives here in Indiana, getting us into a budget surplus while Republicans nationally were losing their way. And we're also going to talk to Representative Frizzell about health care, about the president's past health care legislation. We know how that's going to be screwing us up here in a couple of years. Representative Frizzell is a part-time legislature. We have a part-time legislature here in Indiana. So he has a real job, and he works in long-term care. Health care is his background. He knows exactly how it's going to affect here in the state of Indiana. He knows how it's going to affect us nationally, so he's going to be here to talk to us about that, and we're going to get his thoughts. And we're looking forward to talking to Jackie a little bit later in the show, find out how her congressional campaign is going. With about a minute left before we head into our first break of our first inaugural episode, kind of redundant there, I guess, but still, you know, of our inaugural episode, I just want to thank everybody who's tuning in right now. I think we're going to have a great show ahead of us. And, you know, we're going to be talking about a number of things. We're going to be talking about the Disclose Act, which passed the House early this week. We're going to be talking about financial reforms that are being discussed on Capitol Hill that are going to be affecting Wall Street. We're going to be in the news, and we're going to be talking about what's affecting Indiana, how we see those issues that are affecting Hoosiers, how they're affecting you guys nationally. So we're going to be keeping an eye on both places. So keep in touch with us. We hope you come back after the break, and we will be right back after these brief messages. And welcome back to Gillespie. I'd like to introduce our very first guest today. He is State Representative Dave Frizzell from here in Indiana. Dave has a background in healthcare, and the biggest issue that has come out of this year so far, Representative Frizzell, has been the healthcare legislation that passed, how much it's going to cost the states. Mitch Daniels, our governor, who I talked about in our first segment, has really come out with some bold numbers of how this is going to affect the state of Indiana. And, I mean, while this segment won't be completely focusing on Indiana, you have some perspective on how this will affect the state, how it could affect other states, and kind of give us a national perspective. So just to kind of give some details here, before the healthcare legislation passed, Governor Daniels mentioned that 500,000 Hoosiers would be going on to Medicaid, basically,
right,
seemingly bankrupting the system.
Right. And that's precisely why we have a lawsuit with along 20 other states at this point to try to stop this whole issue, because it is a federal mandate. And you're right, 500,000 Hoosiers are going to go on Medicaid, thrown into Medicaid. And if you figure when it actually goes into force 2014, the next 10 years it's going to cost the state about over $2 billion in additional cost because the added people on the rolls as far as Medicaid is concerned. That will just totally bankrupt the state at this point.
Now, have you talked to any of your fellow elected officials in other states to find out, you know, what their perspective is and how it would affect them?
I think that with most of the states that you will talk to, they're saying the same thing. They're scared to death of this, and as you know, most states are not in good shape financially. Most of them are in a deficit position. You name it, they don't have enough money. This is just going to add to their agony. Now, they may say, the federal government will say, well, you know, come 2014, we're going to pay 100% for Medicaid, which is true. But in the intervening years, that reduction will be, there's going to be a reduction in the support. That's where the problem happens. And this is one reason, beyond the individual mandate from Obamacare, is the reason why they're going to the courts to try to resolve this, because financially there's nothing they can do. They can do two things. They can say, and they can back out of Medicaid if they want. But we're talking about billions of dollars of lost revenue, half the revenue or more than half they're going to lose because of that. Or they just accept and move on with the program. The third option, which I thought would be better, would be a block grant, which gives more flexibilities to the states, less money for the federal government, and more flexibility and choice for the states. But Obama and the Democrats said that is no longer an option. So we're stuck.
Now, tell us, kind of give us a little bit of background about the lawsuit. I know that Attorney General Greg Zeller, Indiana's Attorney General, has joined with, what you said, 20 other states right
yes,
now.
Yes, that's right.
I believe when they joined on, they were probably about 14 or 15, and other states since have joined
the
lawsuit.
Yeah, you even have some states where even though the Attorney General didn't join it, the governor joined it because the Attorney General is a Democrat, so,
mm-hmm.
And vice versa, as a matter of fact. So you have some of those situations going on at this point.
Do you know what the current status of this lawsuit, either from Indiana's perspective or
the one that is based in Virginia, I believe, is supposed to get a ruling or at least a hearing in September. That's a fast track right now. So we will know in September where we're going with this lawsuit at this point. So we'll see.
Interesting.
No guarantee, obviously.
Obviously. Right. You know, fortunately, we have a pretty aggressive attorney general here in Indiana
yes.
who's been willing to – he moved on the action of a letter received from Congressman Dan Burton, Congressman Mike Pence,
right.
Senator Dick Lugar, of asking him to look into this and even to pursue pursue this lawsuit and join
right.
the other states.
Right.
Now, your district
– yes.
You actually represent part of Marion County, which is, for those outside of Indiana, that is actually part of Indianapolis,
right.
And just south of Indianapolis, right. which is a fairly suburban area. What has I can imagine that the reaction to this legislation has been very similar to what we've
yes.
seen nationally.
Josh, I would tell you that of all the calls that I've received, the majority of them have been about health care. And, of course, I have to say, you know, right now it's a federal issue that, of course, affects us dramatically as a state. But they are just upset, very upset about this, upset and scared. And also they believe in my – and I do, too, the constitutionality of this Obamacare that's coming down the pike. You know, they made a lot of promises and they've broken every promise. The one promise is it was going to cost less. You will see that most people, their premiums are going to go up. They're not going to go down. Number two, you can keep your insurance. That's not the case now. They did a national study that 52% of all employers are going to probably change their insurance, and that means most of those people go on the health care with the federal government. So, by and large, every promise that they made have been broken. And the problem is, as you know, this is a mandate. And the only thing that's going to happen with a mandate is you're going to have more people coming into the program. The federal government then will start cutting back on benefits, which brings us back to care that's going to be available for all of us. It's going to be less. No question about it. You're adding 30 million people on the rolls. You're having fewer doctors. And then you're going to have to – and then they're going to, in 2015, they're going to have a panel who makes a decision how to reduce the cost.
Well, for our inaugural listeners, because this is our very first show, so you know, Representative Frizzell, I do thank you for being our
sure.
very first guest. I want them to know that in Indiana we have a part-time legislature,
yes.
which means that you actually have a real job.
Yes, that is true.
And that you get to feel the effects, and you know, not just as a legislator, but as a leader in the business community. So, but your background is in healthcare.
That's correct. Right now my background is long-term care, mm-hmm. which obviously is a big issue for our whole country and this state, and this health care will dramatically affect that as well. The whole goal of the Obamacare is not so much what care we receive, but is centralization of power as far as decisions that are being made. That means that hospitals, nursing homes, all of them will finally become under the purview of the federal government, and that's the goal. They said that was not the goal, but that's the intent, and that's what's probably going to happen. Because right now they're doing the regulations. They're deciding on that as we speak at this mm-hmm. point.
Is there anything that state legislatures can do to sort of preempt the legislation that's coming down the pike?
Right.
Because I know that Obamacare is being implemented sort of slowly. It doesn't go full into effect, like you mentioned, until
right.
2014, which is why we're fortunate enough to be able to have a presidential election before then.
Right.
Unlike previous national plans like this, they have gone into effect immediately, therefore making it almost impossible to repeal legislation like this because people eventually got used to it.
Right.
You know, as soon as you're given a handout, people get used to taking that handout, and they don't want to give it up.
That's exactly
right. Which is why we'll never see Social Security repealed or anything like that. And that's why even the talk of even doing any sort of reform to Social Security is under fierce scrutiny.
Yeah, that's exactly right. There's a lot of states that are talking about somehow where they can just be decoupled from the federal government as far as health care is concerned. There is legislation that is being written in other states at this point. I think anything like that will end up in the courts as well to make a determination on that. I haven't heard anything from Indiana. I certainly would like to look at that. I know that Senator Luke Kinley, who's the head of the finance for the Senate, talked about should we stay in Medicaid and all, but he quickly dropped that because he saw the loss of income. So I understand it. But there is that. There's also a lot of resolutions now about the 10th Amendment, you know, that we recognize.
Yeah, the state sovereignty. I've seen some. There have been other states in the union that have pursued state sovereignty pieces of legislation. I know State Senator Mike Delf.
So did I, by the way.
Okay. All right.
Several of those, we've had that, and we never got a hearing, obviously, which is not surprising where the Democrats dominate in the House. So.
Yeah, well, with the Democrats controlling the House, much like what we see nationally, we see a possibility that the Republicans could take over the Indiana State House. So things are looking good nationally, statewide. Yeah. Things are good there.
I wish the election were held today.
I think we all kind of feel that way. No matter what state you live in, you're really kind of hoping that it turns out that way. Do we see a possibility if the Republicans take over that there could be a pursuit of pursuing state sovereignty?
Yes. I will tell you this. If we get the majority back, yes, I will be introducing that legislation again. I would assume that some of my colleagues would be doing the same, and I believe it'll get a hearing.
Well, and we shouldn't take lightly what Representative Frizzell here is saying. His position within the Indiana House on the Republican side is whip.
Yes.
You are currently the minority whip. We're hoping that you're going to become
the majority
whip. You're basically our Eric Cantor.
That's correct. I guess you could put it that way, I guess. But, yes, absolutely, and I hope we'll have that opportunity. Now, having said that, if we win the majority, which I feel we do, because the disparity between Republican and Democrat support is the greatest we've ever seen since polling right now. Mm-hmm. Those things can change, obviously, but I feel very strongly about it. But we're going to have a tough budget. There's no question about it. You know, sometimes somebody says, don't wish, you know, when you wish for something, it may actually happen. And if we get the majority, we have some really difficult issues to deal with. But the difference with us is we don't automatically say, well, we need to raise taxes to take care of the problem. That will not be our first pursuit at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't mean to kind of change subjects on you here real quick because I know I didn't give you a heads up.
That's okay.
But the other issue that has been kind of that has been big, especially the last couple weeks with Arizona passing their immigration law. I know that, again, to kind of bring them up, State Senator Mike Delf has pursued immigration legislation. Where do you see that affecting Indiana? Do you see anything similar to the Arizona-style legislation coming into Indiana? Do you see that going into other legislative bodies around the country?
Yes. As a matter of fact, there are several states, Oklahoma, a lot of states that have said that they're going to file similar legislation as has happened in Arizona. I see Indiana. I think we're going to see that legislation coming as well. You know, and the fact of the matter is that really it's just a mirror of the federal law, you know, federal regulation at this point. The reason for the lawsuit from the Obama is a calculation. It's a political calculation because he knows nothing's going to happen until after the election at this point. Mm-hmm. So we need, you know, fact of the matter is we all want immigration. There's no question about it. But we want legal immigration. That's the bottom line. And poor Arizona is struggling. They are really in bad shape. Their budget is in tatters because of this. They have criminals now crossing their border, smuggling drugs, those type of things. They even have property now, big swaths of land. They say they have signs up say, please don't enter, you know, because you got illegal immigration and criminality happening. I mean, our own country now. We can't go to certain places. It has to end.
Well, there was the rancher out there who got murdered on his own land because there was a drug line that was coming.
Yeah, drug pathway through his
right through
exactly.
The middle of his property.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Okay. It's amazing that people of that state have to fear for their lives now because of this whole mess. The president refuses to do anything about it. He said we'll send out 1,200 National Guard. That hasn't happened yet. So.
Didn't a Minuteman, someone involved with the Minuteman Project, get arrested and prosecuted down there for basically defending his own property?
That's correct. The they're doing that. The Obama administration is doing that on a regular basis right now. You know, they are, which is a sad thing. I mean, the state can't even protect itself. The federal government refuses to do their constitutional responsibility in the states. I don't blame them. They're now jumping into the fray. This will eventually end up in the Supreme Court, is my guess.
If not sooner.
Yes.
As we know, our national committee woman is bringing Sheriff Joe from
Apayo.
Joe Apayo from Maricopa County, Arizona, which is metropolitan Phoenix,
right.
To Indiana sometime this summer, I believe.
Right. Well, and the other thing is, just to give you an example, Obama just placed the gentleman who's head of immigration, a person who comes from a sanctuary city. And
San Francisco?
Is it Los Angeles? I'm not sure. But one of those states, or one of those cities, he supports that effort. And now he puts him ahead of immigration. Now, what's that tell you? You know,
Fox in charge of the hen house.
You got it.
That's right. Well, it's you give us hope for things that, you know, in terms of elections,
right.
You know, that Indiana, one, is on top of these national issues, that that we are taking steps to basically rein in our own state sovereignty.
Absolutely.
And be able to challenge the constitutionality of some of these pieces of legislation and how they affect the states.
Right.
And we know that you emerged unscathed, actually, I believe even unchallenged in your primary. Indiana had our primaries here a little over.
Right, and I think that's fortunate, because I think all incumbents were targeted at this point, which is not a bad thing, because mm-hmm. I think we're culling some of the people that are not conservatives, and some of those people have lost. And I think it's a good thing. I think the Tea Party has served a very good process, and I hope they continue to do that, because we, 2006, 2008, we were off track. As Republicans, we were off track. And I think the Tea Party has been a great blessing for us in the end.
We got just about a minute left. We'll probably ask you to kind of keep your answer short.
Right.
In the time that Republicans have been, that they lost their way.
Right.
Financially, Governor Daniels came in,
yes.
defeated a Democrat in 2004, a Democrat incumbent,
mm-hmm.
and Republicans here at the state house level have actually have done what national Republicans should have been doing.
That's
guys
right.
have cut spending.
That's right.
You've lowered taxes.
Mm-hmm.
How did you work that out? How'd you be able to pull that out?
Well, the fact of the matter is that he made the decision, instead of raising taxes, as I told you, is usually the first step for Democrats, that we got to raise taxes. He said, no, we're going to cut spending. You're right. As far as departments, he cut 15%. He's going to cut another 10%. You know, so he has made the deliberate choice that he says, hey, people in this recession are suffering as taxpayers, so we need to cut back government. We don't need to extend that suffering because we increase taxes or expand government. He's the right man. He's doing the right job. He just needs a House can support that effort.
Well, Representative Frizzell, thank you for being a part of our very
Thanks,
first
Josh.
Show. Thank you for being a leader in fiscal responsibility down at the State House, and we'll be right back after these brief words. All right, and welcome back to Gillespie. I'm here with my crew of Christy Kelly, Mark Warner, and Mike Jazerski. On the phone, we have State Representative and 2nd Congressional District candidate from Indiana, Jackie Walorski. Jackie, thank you for being on our show. I know this isn't the first time that you've been on FTR Radio, so we're glad that you've come back, and I'm pleased that you're on our show.
Well, I appreciate you guys. Thanks for the opportunity. It's great to hear from you.
Well, kind of give us a quick wrap-up of your campaign so far. Notice that you just got the big endorsement from Eric Cantor yesterday.
We did. And, you know, we had National Right to Life this week as well, which is huge. It's huge for me, and it's huge for this district, especially in light of the health care vote that Joe Donnelly cast with the two-pack pack and turning their backs on that issue. But, you know, by and large, this campaign has taken off. It's been like rocket fuel poured on fire. I mean, it's been unbelievable since primary, and that's been very encouraging to us, because we have a massive grassroots network, probably second only to the governor in the state, and you know, we are doing this 18 hours a day, 7 days a week, and building an army to turn this seat. And so we've received a lot of national attention. We're a highly targeted race at the national level, and you know, we're just going around listening to what folks are saying, and there's pretty much consistent themes, which are people in the second district are upset about massive deficit spending in general, and health care, and then the whole concept of where are the jobs that were promised. So, you know, I was at a festival this morning, Josh, and it was amazing. Of everybody there, you know, the people that were lined up to talk to us and talk to me about this race, and they're very excited. There are a lot of Democrats, crossover voters, and, you know, it's been phenomenal. It's just been great momentum. We have a big kickoff tomorrow in Elkhart for our fall campaign, a big fall kickoff at 2 o'clock, and we're expecting a couple thousand people to show up. So I would say that we're on the march, and the 2nd District is well within sight of flipping.
Has anybody actually seen Joe Donnelly sweating yet? Because I have to imagine that he is.
Well, he doesn't show up much with me in public. I mean, he seldom shows up if I'm someplace. I mean, we're in parades together, of course. Outside of that, we're usually not side by side. Usually when he sees us, the blood runs from his face. He turns very white and doesn't have much to say. And I'll tell you this. I mean, people are very, very vocal about their opposition to what he's voted for. And so I'm not sure he goes in public much without a lot of reinforcements around him.
Well, what you've been hitting Joe pretty hard recently, especially on a lot of his budget busting votes. What do you plan to do if you're elected to Congress to help kind of bring down and pare down this massive spending that we're seeing in Washington right now?
Well, good question, Josh. You know, the reason I'm running for Congress is not because I'm looking for something to do. I didn't run for the State House because I was looking for something to do. I wasn't bored. I knew I could contribute something in the state of Indiana, and we were looking at, you know, almost $1 billion of deficit, and you know, we've been able to take our state to almost a $2 billion surplus without a tax increase, and in the middle of a recession, have a AAA bond rating. It's because we learned to leverage private money from the outside in our state, not public money. And that's exactly what has to happen in D.C. That's why I'm going there, is to be a part of and to take the lead in freezing this budget at the federal level, cutting it, shrinking it back like we did in the state of Indiana, getting rid of every piece of excess thing that we have, including agencies, and pare this thing down so that we can live within our means, and so working Hoosiers actually have something to look forward to, you know, in things like retirement and their children's education, and not having to just live and work for the government. And Indiana has a great story to tell. We have a story that very few states can tell and needs to be told at the federal level. So I'm all about freezing, shrinking, and cutting that federal deficit, that federal budget, to get us back underneath the deficit.
Yeah, our first guest was today was Representative Dave Frizzell, who I know you're friends with. And one of our closing questions was how, in a time when national Republicans were losing their way on fiscal issues, Indiana, with the leadership of Mitch Daniels and Brian Bosma when he was Speaker of the House, you guys actually slashed the budget. You were fiscal hawks.
And that has to happen at the national level. And that's what people should expect of their representatives. People ought to be expecting that across the board. And I'll tell you this, Josh. I was in D.C. about a month ago, and it was amazing to me how many people that I met that were running for Congress on the Republican ticket were envious of the fact that I'm from the state of Indiana, and I have a story to tell, and it's because of the governor, it's because of the leadership our party's had, and it's because of the decisions we made as representatives, and we stood there and took it in the teeth, and we didn't back down. And it's amazing. I mean, literally, when the governor talks about all heads are turning to Indiana, they are, because we have just done what most people are talking about. And that's the difference between me and Joe Donnelly. And that's why I can go and look anybody in the eye and say, I can promise you I'll do the same thing we just did, and it'll work. And Hoosiers get that.
Well, this past week, we had Pelosi and Hoyer up there saying that, you know what, there's not going to be a budget this year.
Yeah.
And then yesterday, the House voted to pass they voted to pass the Disclose Act, which basically tries to overrule what the Supreme Court ruled unconstitutional in McCain-Feingold. The Congress is coming back and saying that, you know, everybody needs to be up there disclosing what they're disclosing. You know, you need to have the CEO, but, oh, wait, the unions don't have to do that. The AARP doesn't have to do that. And here is the kicker that kind of struck me as odd. The NRA doesn't have to do it, but then the gun owners of America do.
Yeah, go figure. And you know, let me just answer your first question there, Josh, about Cindy Hoyer talking this week in Pelosi that there won't be a budget. And let me tell you, and I talked to a radio station up here locally about on the day that they came out with that announcement. Those guys are cowards. And I can boldly and confidently call them cowards, because you know, the only job Congress really has is to pass the budget. The only job I have as a state representative of the state of Indiana, constitutionally duly sworn, is to pass a budget in this state. If those guys are too cowardly to do what the Constitution tells them to do and what they said they would do when they raised their right hand and took that oath, then they need to leave those seats. They're not worthy to be there. If they can't muster the backbone to pass a budget and be completely legit with the American people and with Hoosiers and transparent about how much debt they've gotten this nation into. With $14 trillion looking at us next year, this is an abysmal failure of what's happening in D.C. I think it's an outrage. I think people ought to hold their feet to the fire and hold them accountable. And then to have the gall and audacity to jump into that Disclose Act, which is all about getting more government power grab hands onto things that the government has no business in whatsoever, which is private industry, private organizations, and the ability that Americans have to actually dissent to their government. And so we're seeing another massive power grab. It means that these guys haven't heard from voters, they're not listening, and they have not heard what the American people have said, which is, you know, stop the political games, get back to the business they're hired to do, which is to get this country back on track, and they're obviously not doing that. And so I think it's very cowardly.
Hi, Representative Walorski. This is Christy Kelly, and I have a question for you. You know, clearly we need to slash the budget, and we have a great our national debt is astronomical. But something else that I think we need to be concerned about slashing is legislation. You know, we have like the Disclose Act, and then this latest so-called financial reform. And something that did surprise me, though, was the NRA is typically considered pretty conservative, but yet they supported this unconstitutional Disclose Act. What do you think would be behind that?
Yeah, I don't know. I did hear Wayne LaPierre say this week. I was shocked. When I heard that, number one, I thought it couldn't possibly be true. I did hear a disclaimer by Wayne LaPierre this week, the president of the NRA, saying that they are excluded, but they still vehemently disagree and do not support that piece of legislation. I don't know. I guess, you know, that question probably has to be directed to Wayne LaPierre to find out, you know, what are they thinking. But I was shocked. It's not in the character and the tradition of the NRA to be involved in, you know, stepping aside a big brother government there and allowing a power grab like that to happen. But I don't know, because I really haven't talked to anybody from the NRA.
What do you think is the reality of this legislation becoming law?
Well, I would say with the mentality these guys have, which is a lot of, you know, thug political politics coming from Chicago, I would say that these guys are going to push this agenda until November, and they're going to push this thing until there's no tomorrow. And obviously, they want to make sure that the government has their hand in every single piece that they can get their hand in before this election, before they lose Congress. And I think the reality, and what I'm finding out is this, and just being out in public constantly, I am out there constantly, and every single time they pull a shenanigan like this, the American people are not buying it. They call it a power grab. They're tired of the arrogance, and they're tired of those people in D.C. not listening to them. And so, you know, what's going to end up happening, Chrissy, they're going to push this envelope way too far and fall off the edge, and Republicans will get Congress back because of the arrogance of this attitude of not stopping and listening to the American public.
Many of us, you know, we do believe that, you know, we're going to have a turnover of power here in November, and we're all looking forward to it. But what about the damage that can be done with this lame duck administration, Congress, if you will, that will be clearly trying to push through as much of their ideology as possible? Will there be any, will we be able to slow it down? Will we be able to turn it over?
Well, don't forget, the lesson I learned as a freshman in the Indiana House in 2005 is the most powerful group of people in D.C. in January are going to be the freshman class. And I learned that when I came into the State House in Indiana. We had the most closely divided House in the nation, and therefore the freshmen, nobody could pass a bill. The Republican caucus could not pass a bill without my vote as a freshman and my colleagues that came in with me. And therefore, we learned really quickly, the six or seven of us, you know, around a table, that we would drive the policy and the agenda for the state of Indiana in that term, and we did. And so I was telling National Journal Magazine a couple of weeks ago when they interviewed me and four other candidates, they were asking about kind of like what you're saying, is kind of like how can one congressman make a difference? What can you do when you have, you know, Democratic president? And my answer will be the same to you, is the people that are going to drive the agenda in January are going to be the freshman class of whatever party is in power. And my money is on the Republican freshman class driving the agenda of the nation. We are the closest people to the ground troops right now of what people are saying, what they expect, and what they want. And what they want is they don't want party rhetoric. They want leaders, new leaders, to be elected and to stand up and have a voice and to keep those American people engaged at the table. And that's exactly what I plan on doing. I plan on filing a defunder of that health care appropriation bill in January to kill that thing right in its tracks before taxes kick into the state of Indiana and take our economy down the tubes. I mean, and to lead on that issue, and you know, and to vow not to hide behind these votes, but to visibly and vocally lead and take on this Obama administration, and I think we'll be successful. And I think Barack Obama's a smart man. If he's going to run for president in 2012 for re-election, I think he's going to have to figure out how to work and compromise with the Republican Congress. I can definitely guarantee you I will be in the lead at the table.
Thank you, Jackie. We really look forward to that.
Thank you for your leadership in the State House, Jackie, and for the charge that you're doing and running for Congress in the 2nd Congressional District. We wish you well. We want everybody to make sure to check out Jackie's website, JackieWilorski.com, where you can find out how...
It's StandWithJackie.com.
I'm sorry, Jackie.
StandWithJackie.com. It's okay.
StandWithJackie.com, and...
Yeah.
There you can find out how you can donate to her campaign. Check her out on Facebook and on Twitter. Jackie is everywhere. Jackie, thank you for your time, and we wish you luck on the campaign trail.
Thanks, you guys. It's great to hear from you. Have a good day. Have a good rest of the weekend. Take care.
Bye. That was our segment with State Representative and 2nd Congressional District candidate Jackie Walorski. Right now we're going to have you listen to the one-minute endorsement from Congressman Eric Cantor, and we'll be right back after this.
I'm Congressman Eric Cantor, the House Republican Whip. I'd like to take a moment to introduce you to Jackie Walorski from Indiana's 2nd District. For the past 6 years, Jackie has kept her promise to fight for common sense conservative solutions in the Indiana State House. America is at a critical crossroads, and the road we take will determine the kind of country we want to be. We need to end Washington's culture of reckless spending. Jackie is a proven conservative leader who can help us bring fiscal sanity back to our nation's government. I'd like to ask you to join me in supporting Jackie Walorski. Please go to her website, StandWithJackie.com, and contribute what you can. Every dollar will help send Jackie to Washington, where she can join the fight for real conservative solutions. Thank you.
Welcome back to Gillespie. We just finished talking with Jackie Walorski, who's running against Joe Donnelly in the 2nd Congressional District here in Indiana. Christy brought up a good subject. You brought up a great subject with Jackie, and that was the Disclose Act. Campaigns are on everybody's mind right now. And with President Obama chiding the U.S. Supreme Court for striking down clearly unconstitutional provisions of the McCain-Feingold bill, here we see Congress is trying to skirt the court's decision by introducing this Disclose Act. Not only does this violate the First Amendment free speech rights, but we see preferential treatment given to clearly Democrat-leaning organizations, although the NRA is in there and we're still all trying to figure out why.
I think they just tossed them a bone, essentially.
And it could have been – I do believe that was probably an effect to try to bring Republicans to support mm-hmm. the Disclose Act, which still narrowly passed. I believe the vote was 219 to 206. So even if there was even if every Republican voted against that bill, we still had Democrats who were also crossing over saying that this is a bad bill. We see preferential treatment giving to unions, to the AARP, and the odd thing being to the NRA. But whereas they get preferential treatment, you see organizations like the Gun Owners of America. They don't get the same kind of treatment the NRA does. And so it's kind of this separate but equal kind of attitude where they get to do whatever they want. They get to give how much they want. They don't have to disclose it. But then you have, for instance, the Gun Owners of America, who will have to not only have their CEO, you know, record not only every single donation that was given. I mean, they have to disclose absolutely everything. And I think that you could have had bipartisan approval for this bill if everyone was treated equally in this. If everybody had to disclose their goods, fine.
But
they all
not
have
the
to disclose.
Point of the legislation.
Of course not. It's about gigging organizations that don't support democratic rule. And
you mean socialist rule under the name Democrat?
If you want to call out that, sure. I think you got a point there, Mike. And then, as we saw here, the Republican Study Committee sent out this brief, and those of us who are listening to this right now, we're all involved in new media in some sort of way. Some of us are, those of us who contribute to FTR are prominent bloggers. Others of you who listen are prominent bloggers. You're involved in some way. Christy actually has, if you could pass me that thing real quick, Christy, actually it would be the second page. The RSC was looking into how this could possibly affect bloggers, and this is more of an RSC talking point. The Republican Study Committee that is chaired by Tom Price sent out basically the RSC action alert, encouraging members to vote no on the Disclose Act. One thing that kind of rung true with me being a blogger, and I know the rest of us at this table, as we are bloggers to HoosierAccess.com and I am to JoshGillespie.net, this was interesting. Like so many other provisions of the bill, the provisions affecting bloggers make the Anacostia River look like a clear bottle of Dasani water. Despite RSC staff consultations with renowned campaign and election lawyers, it remains unclear to them and to us, being the RSC staff, the extent to which bloggers might be harmed by this legislation. Although the bill does include a provision exempting internet communications from provisions regarding general public political advertising, the exemption from coordinated communications, underlined, only affects news stories, commentaries, and editorials. Those are not general public political ads, thus leaving bloggers in a gray area. And since a coordinated communications exception does not mention the internet, it could open up bloggers who refer to a clearly identified federal candidate during a certain time frame from coming under the coordinated communication definition and thus under onerous federal regulations and prohibitions. Maybe. So that affects us here at the table as we record this podcast, but that also affects other people that you listen to on FTR Radio. Tabitha Hale, Fingers Malloy, anybody you think of who's on this, Jenny Erickson, the list goes on. It affects us all. It affects those of you who are bloggers as well. Possibly. Maybe. Not only does the administration feel that it should be involved in corporations and individuals' campaign pockets, but it also believes that it needs to be getting more of our tax dollars for what can only be termed another Wall Street bailout with this House and Senate compromise on financial reform. As you guys probably know, an agreement was reached by the House and Senate Conference Committee on financial reform. The bill would continue to expose taxpayers by making bailouts permanent and codifying the too-big-to-fail status for Wall Street firms. And, Mike, as we were talking off air, you said that Democrats chided President Bush for saying that the GM and other auto manufacturers were too big to fail. They chided him for it. And here they're coming back and using the exact same language to bail out Wall Street.
Again.
Actually, it was. I take that back. President Bush used it to with the
AIG.
AIG. They were too big to fail, not the automotive industry. Although they probably
they were lumped in there too. I believe he mentioned that in relation to GM and Chrysler is too big to fail. AIG too big to fail.
Mm-hmm.
One of the Wall Street firms, I think, was it Lehman Brothers, was allowed to fail.
Mm-hmm.
Several major national banks, for example, National City, a organization myself and Mr. Warner over here know about, was taken over last year by PNC, and now they are fully assimilated into PNC. They were too big to fail.
Mm-hmm.
Washington Mutual, WAMU, they were too big to fail. They were absorbed up by Chase. You can go on and on.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, they talk about all these things that are too big to fail, yet there's been crowing on Capitol Hill about reform of Fannie and Freddie. Yet even that is that was completely rejected in this financial compromise. The Democrat conferees rejected an offer making Fannie and Freddie financial companies for purposes of the bill's liquidation process and would have relieved the taxpayers of the GSE's liabilities. But the bill does not address the issue of reforming Fannie and Freddie. Are we surprised?
No.
Absolutely not, especially when you got some of these senators who are getting pretty cush deals with these organizations.
It was like yesterday on Neil Cavuto. I just happened to be home, and he was talking with a union, the AFL-CIO union chief economist.
The dude swore at him.
Yeah, he called him an asshole. The thing is he said, you have to spend more money. You have to spend more money. And Cavuto's like, it's not working now. And he just could not come up with an answer. And then Cavuto finally looks at him and goes, you're an economist, right? And he's like, well, yeah, but and then Cavuto kind of came back, and that's when he called him the asshole. But Cavuto just kind of ignored him and said,
wait a minute, who did? The union guy?
The union chief economist called Neil Cavuto the asshole. And my thing was, it was like, wait a minute. Keep it classy, you know?
Wait a minute. Unions? Classy.
Yeah. Exactly.
I know. It's a stretch of the imagination. But the thing is that it shocked me. These are things that have been going on Capitol Hill this past week. You know, they've been discussing the financial reform. We've had the Disclose Act. And as we discussed with Representative Wadlorski, that Democrats have decided to do no budget. And so,
what is with that?
Are you surprised?
I'm not surprised, but see, I thought it was written into federal code or whatever that, you know,
Jackie said, your sole role, the priority role, not the main role of an elected official is to do a budget.
It's fiscal appropriations. That is the role of it's the role of the legislature. It's the role of Congress. It's even the role of our city county council here in Indianapolis.
You're talking about Democrats in control of Congress. They don't know the rules. They haven't been playing by the rules for the last
years?
Uh-huh. They make up their own rules as they go. And this is why common sense and Democrats don't go together.
And, of course, the only rule they want to is that when they flash out, oh, we got this PAYGO rule over here. Oh, yeah. We got to raise your taxes to satisfy the PAYGO rule.
You know, do as we say, don't do as we do. I think that's kind of the motto.
Actually, I was thinking the three monkeys, you know, hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil.
Well, this week, yeah, I follow some Democrats on Twitter. And
really?
I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, you got to know what they're saying.
You got to know what they're
saying. I even follow Speaker Pelosi now that she has a legit account.
You got to know what they're saying. But the funniest thing is Hoyer, all these past few weeks, was, we need to talk about fiscal responsibility. We need to talk. Finally, I responded to one of his tweets and said, hey,
where have you been?
Where have you been? And you've been voting. Of course, there's no response because they don't want to respond to the questions. But
it's probably one of his staffers
Probably. The only Democrat senator that I know that does her own tweeting is Senator McCaskill from Missouri. She does her own tweeting from her BlackBerry.
I say there are a number of House reps that do their own
tweeting.
But
she is the only known Democrat that does her own tweeting on her BlackBerry.
Who's that one up in Michigan? Candace Miller, does she do her own? Or
that I don't know, but I just look at it. But Claire McCaskill does her own tweeting. You got to hand it to her.
I'll give her that. You know, I do enjoy the House members who do who you can clearly tell that they do their own tweeting. Members like John Culberson of Texas, Jason Chaffetz of Utah. I actually enjoy Jason Chaffetz' Twitter handle, Jason in the House. You can tell he's easily one of the younger members of Congress, but he's very much into his job, very much into tweeting and letting his constituents know what's going on. And with that, we're actually out of time. This has been a quick hour. I thank everybody for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you come back next week. We're going to have more fun, more excitement, more guests. Again, I want to thank Mark Warner, Christy Kelly, Mike Jazerski, my team. This has been Gillespie, and we'll see you next week.